And a very good morning to you. This is the Thursday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Well, it's due to a paid-for program that ran from 9:45 to 10:15. And we're glad you stayed along to join us this Thursday. We have our usual breaks for the regional roundup at 5 minutes to noon. We track the latest. We have network news from Flow, the latest from Starcom Network. And we go until 2. John Leland Stout taking care of things technical. I'm Dennis Johnson, your host for today's program. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Good morning. I just wanted to raise a concern, Mr. Johnson. I'm hoping that someone from the Ministry of Transport and Works and Maintenance can address it, or someone from the Barbados Licensing Authority, and I hope that you allow me to do so. Yesterday, I had a situation where I went into the licensing authority. My son's permit has expired, and it would have expired on the 15th of May. Obviously, we were under COVID-19 restrictions, and now that he is trying to have an extension on that permit because his driving test was due to be on the 13th of May, 2 days before the expiration of the permit, and we're being told that we have to pay to have the permit extended. Now, I find this to be burdensome. I find this to be unreasonable. The explanation from the personnel there said that, you have to pay to have the permit renewed because it's through no fault of the licensing authority. That has me a little bit baffled, because then that would indicate to me that it's through some fault of ours.
No, perhaps it's through the fault of the government, and the licensing authority don't see themselves as being either an extension of or the agency of the government. That's one of the delicate lines that get drawn from time to time. We only execute in policy, we don't make it kind of thing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And this is something that is unacceptable, the explanation, because if you have not even determined when you're going to reschedule the driver's test, how can you then therefore make a requirement of someone to pay for the permit all over again? And I need someone to address it, because I cannot believe for 1 minute that I am the only one affected. And you're asking persons to pay for a permit that they were quite ready and willing to do the driver's test. We had COVID-19 restrictions. Fine. But how can you ask someone? To me, it's so nonsensical. Why not just give an extension, maybe 6 weeks from the date of the expiration date, and then use that as your guideline to reschedule the driver's test? But you're asking taxpayers then to fork out another fee, which is burdensome.
Ma'am, I think what not seeking to represent them or anybody else, the directives to extend for the 6 weeks, as you suggest, which seems quite logical, more than likely is outside of their permit and purview, and they have to wait on somebody to make the recommendation and somebody to give the directive. In the meantime, they go with what they're told. It's one of the, to me, frustrating things about the way government and government agencies
operate.
Run. Yeah,
yep.
Because...
Yep.
You would find that ministers, as happened during the course of this COVID lockdown period, you would find that ministers would go on air, they would, through the Government Information Service and various other media, would say, we've extended the period of the emergency from X time to X time. For example, now it's extended to August 31st. But all the things that may be affected by this extension are not brought into focus at the same time and said in detail, so that anyone who has to obtain, let's say, the stickers for your car for the period June, July, August, will now be given a period up until X, because during the period June, July, August, these stickers for your car when you pay your insurance will not be available, or these services are not available. So during that period, these types of minutiae, these little bits and pieces filtered down the line, seemingly are either overlooked or not told to the public. So you tend to get a call, or you call someone, and depending on how much they know or don't know, they sometimes are in the dark, and they would give you an answer that just doesn't make any sense to you.
And Mr. Johnson,
and that particular place, let me just say, that particular place, I've seen more than one comment about concerns like the one you have. Renewing permits, getting, I know they did issue a release on picture driver's license. Mm-hmm. If you were renewing your license but you didn't need a new picture, there were guidelines on how to get that done. But there were other queries that just weren't answered, or people didn't get the answer they thought they should.
And you know, I get it. It's a lot to grapple with. You're going to have to do a lot of housekeeping.
Yeah,
but I'm
correct.
Saying at some point, sir, someone would have given this directive. No one has a semblance of independent thought that could have said, no, well, this is really no fault of the customer, because you mm-hmm. are providing a service.
Correct.
At no point anyone with some independent thought could not have challenged this and said, no, perhaps this is how it ought to be, or this is how it's going. I mean, and when you have, I mean, again, I get it. But when you go into these places and you have persons who are just regurgitating the policy, this is what we've been told, ma'am, or whatever, it just serves as an irritant. You know why it serves as an irritant? Because you cannot operate like that in the private sector. Because their money is their business. So if I'm saying absolutely no way should I have been told, oh, well, it's not our fault, you have to pay. I get it. I do get it. But how is it that somebody can find that this is acceptable, that we're in a period of lockdown, which otherwise, if we were not under restrictions, we would have gone about this business as normal. But then now you can say you're essentially penalizing me. You're essentially penalizing those persons for something that is beyond our control, when it just simply serves to say, okay, let's do an extension. Let's do an extension. And I need someone to answer to this. I need answers, because I do not think that this is acceptable.
Ma'am, I hope they listen to you and I hope they respond, because as you say, I'm sure you're not the only one. Perhaps the only one with the temerity to vocalize it, but I'm sure you're not the only person in that predicament.
Well, I would listen and I would hope that someone would be able to address it, and I thank you for allowing me to use this medium. Thank you.
Thank you as well. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Hello, bless the morning, Mr. Johnson.
Morning, ma'am.
I'm glad you're on.
Because?
I want to ask you. I was looking at your word, capitalism.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still learning.
We all are.
I am.
Learning stops when you die.
Yeah, that's how it should be.
That's how it is.
Yeah. Okay, look at your word. But you might be able to sharpen it for me.
Why? Yeah. Why do you think I could show
you?
What were you doing?
You have a wide range of knowledge and so on. So
I just expressed myself.
I get a lot of big words and capitalism,
mm-hmm.
owning capital, practicing or advocating capitalism.
The definition, using the same word to define it?
Capitalism, economic system characterized by private or corporate ownership
mm-hmm.
of capital goods
mm-hmm.
and by prices.
Mm-hmm.
Production and distribution of goods that are determined mainly by competition in a free market.
Mm-hmm. Which part of it you don't get?
I just wanted to hear your opinion, sharp opinion of that.
Of what?
Capitalism.
Ma'am, I don't like isms for a lot of reasons, right? Because what you do is you plaster a name on something and people use it as they feel like using it. Capital means the money or the sweat equity, whatever you invest to get a business started. And the process says, I start a business, I invest either my money, my time into it, and whatever I produce, I put on the market, I put a price on it, people pay the price I ask, and my price is determined by several things. My price can be determined by how much I put into it, how much I plan to get out of it, what I pay my employees, what I want to keep for myself. If I have bank charges, I factor that in. Sometimes the price depends on what the market will pay. So that if I am selling apples at $5 for five, and you come along and selling apples at $3 for five, and I want to get you out of the marketplace, if I have the wherewithal to do it, I drop my apples down to $1 for five and run you out. That was termed competition.
Yeah, and that's where I want to get to.
So if you knew that, why you wanted me to get to that? Tell me.
You need a little confirmation.
Okay. I hope I have confirmed what you want. Tell me.
All right. So this is, I want to get to two things. Mm-hmm. So you put out your money and open a business and you're making some profits. But where are you getting the money from? You're getting money from this is how you break me down, my simple way. You get any money from the people that are spending back their money with you.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you can become a millionaire, whatever. Don't you think that you have, I'm talking to governments now, and the big business. Don't you think that you have a duty to, I hear about trickle-down economics, but I don't know how much rent is a trickle, how much is being that trickle, because it could be a bucket that being thrown into another bucket. It could be a teaspoon of water or oil or whatever that is trickling. You understand what I'm saying? So therefore, the populace are not usually recompensed for supporting that business.
No.
You know, so.
No, because they get what they pay for. Mm-hmm. That's their recompense. Mm-hmm. If I have, as I said, apples, and you buy the apples, you get what you want. So what am I supposed to recompense you for?
Communities, to keep the community going, I see it as...
That has nothing to do with business, ma'am.
Yeah. But what I'm going on is this, where the world is at right now. This where, and I think we're at a place where we can start afresh.
That's been tried already, you know.
All right, okay. Let me put it again, though. Never mind. We can start afresh because we see where the economic situation is right now, even COVID has shown up so much things. So that, are we going to go back there? Are we going to have keep a blind or don't see what is needed, deliberately not see what is needed to be done?
What is needed to be done, ma'am?
Equity.
Ma'am, listen. There is a system. You see, that's why I tell you I like to steer away from isms.
I don't mean that. I don't want to see better.
Ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I said I steer away from isms.
Ism.
There was a system called communism. That's what it was supposed to be. A community approach to be the anti-capitalist approach. You were supposed to merge all what you have and share it among all those who need. Equitable distribution of wealth among the masses so that everybody would share in the collective, so that those who have would put it into the collective and it would be shared equally among all. The system collapsed because of something called human greed, where those who controlled the system decided, well, everybody will get, but I'll get a little extra because I need a little extra. And because I have the controls, I get a little extra. Same thing that happens with the other ism, capitalism. Fellas say, it's my business, it's my money, I put it in there, why should I not enjoy the fruits of my labor? You get what you want. You get your apples, you get your pears, you get your cars. I get the money. Why should I then turn around and say, well, let me feel sorry for you because you buy the car and you can't put gas in it, Kadir, let me give you a little something to buy the gas. We have tried all these various isms. And
because
the
enough
problem
is not being trickled down.
Ma'am, trickled from where?
is not being put back in the community or into the lives of those who are supporting the same business. And do people really expect to live in peace if this system continues, or they don't really care? You know? Let me go on to... I answer a question. I don't know if you wanted to.
I can't answer that.
All right. Okay. And people see how this thing goes as life goes on. The other day, Mr. John Kelman. Yeah, I think his name is John Kelman. He was speaking about the issue of mental illness and so on that came out after the two gentlemen that were on the job got killed. My condolences goes out to their relatives, their friends, their loved ones. You're speaking about that, and it made me think, condolences goes out to those relatives that are grieving at this time on both sides. But I'm seeing pity and care and a deep thought towards the man that did this. You see, homelessness.
Ma'am.
The same
ma'am.
Capitalism.
Ma'am.
Huh?
Mm-hmm. Let me issue this word of caution.
Mm-hmm.
I understand the need for people to comment on things that consume their thoughts. I would advise to not make judgments about cases that you have absolutely no idea what transpired, who the parties are, or based on what people say, or what they suspect, or what they think. It's a dangerous thing to do. Ma'am, no, I am saying don't do it. Don't put it any other way.
I hate to hear the word vagrant. And homelessness in Barbados, as the young man that takes care of the homeless.
Mr. Saffrey.
Mr. Saffrey. He's always calling out for help and so on. I understand they get a place, but it's not big enough for everyone and for everything. And I would like to advocate for the government to really look into the situation. And those persons really need help who are out there homeless.
Ma'am, have you ever heard of Ninja Man?
Mm-hmm.
He's been taken to court on more than one occasion. You ever read what he said or what he says?
I think I heard somebody say he said something. You can remind me.
I think you hear somebody say. You should read what he says. Ninja Man says that he cannot be said to have no fixed place of abode because everybody knows where to find him. He's by the Treasury building. He's also said that he cannot live inside of any place. He has claustrophobia. He has to live outside. Now, this is what he said. Now, you could take him to various places, have his head examined, have doctors pontificate on what is or is not wrong with him and what should or should not be done with him. If you have a gentleman who says, I do not like to be confined to four walls, I cannot stay inside, it makes me uncomfortable, are you going to take him and put him in a home? Are you going to put him inside the four walls for him
Mr.
to
Johnson,
react?
Mr. Johnson, that
yes,
is Ninja Man. And I don't think that everybody that is homeless falls in that category.
And ma'am, I am trying to tell you, yes, but you see, you're saying they need help and that government needs to find a place to put them. And I'm saying to you, depending on the type, you see, when I tried to talk, I tried to talk so that people understand what I'm saying. And I know people find that sometimes I take too long to do this and I engage people too long. I try to get people to just think a little bit, okay? When you say someone needs help, stop there because you cannot prescribe what kind of help the person may need. Somebody may need help on various levels that will not mean finding a place to put them where they're not on the streets.
But they should know their story then. Who's responsible to know their story and to help them? If we, the community, us and city person sleeping on the streets and different things like that, even young girls I see in town now, who's responsible for staying after them? I still think there's a responsibility, though.
Okay, ma'am. Brass Tacks, good morning.
Dennis, good morning to you.
Morning, ma'am.
Dennis, if you don't mind, I took the time this morning, I was scrambling to put together this information. I'm going to try to be very brief because I understand how it is. I want to speak today. I had 2 points, but I'm only going to reserve my comments to one issue. Mm-hmm. I want to speak on the question of the Guyana election, the results, the current impasse, etc., that is ongoing, and give a brief historical background and just, you know, I just want to put a couple points so the listeners can determine for themselves. Now, I think it was around March 10th. The Guyana election was the 2nd of March, 2020. Around 10th of March, no, yeah, 2nd of March. 10th of March, Ms. Motley went down with CARICOM persons to meet with the current President Granger. When I read what was stated by Mr. Granger in his press release, etc., Mr. Granger said he asked for a CARICOM observer team to come in. And he agreed because what the opposition Jagbe PPP party wanted was the votes cast in Region Box 10, I think Region 10.
Region 10.
Yes, thank you.
That was the one that was under most scrutiny.
Scrutiny, exactly. To be counted invalid, etc. Mm-hmm. I was very curious as to Mr. Granger's point. He said, we do not only want the votes to be counted, recounted in Region 10. We want all the boxes to be recounted. Soon as I heard that, I said to myself, there are things that we are not hearing that might be that would come out of those recounting the other boxes. You see, what happened, Dennis, is, and listeners, we were getting information in a skewed way. The Granger PNC party is similar to the Democratic Labour Party, is slightly similar to the PNM party. And I found, this is my observation, the UNC and the PPP Jagdeo party, they're like two faces of the same coin. And the BLP is similar in some respect, but not entirely like them, but similar in the approach to how they do things. So that Granger party stood back and let the process be allowed, the legal process continued, counting, recounting, etc. But the PPP is a party of social media, like how Ms. Motley and the BLP is, and the UNC in Trinidad. They're party of, they run to the media. So their position was always being put out there. In addition, you had some curious remarks being made by the OAS. Now, if you understand who is the head of the OAS, an Indo-Guyanese guy who made, when you do the history of it, you will understand certain things. The representative from the OAS, Mr. Golden at first, and then I think Mr. Owenata made certain statements. Mr. Gonzalez, who in a Guyanese newspaper was stated, he clearly said, yes, I have visited and spent time at the home of Mr. Jagdeo. Yes. Then you had, we have Peter Wicker making comments. He is a pollster in the Caribbean. So you have to ask, is anywhere around there, just a question, any conflict of interest, and is there something else going on? And I will give you what the Court of Appeal says, and you all will, it will probably surprise some. Never in the history of my watching and observing CARICOM elections have I seen something like this happen. For years, and I'm sure, Dennis, you would agree with me, the Guyana elections have always had allegations of corruption and fraud, whether it's the PNC, Afro-based party, the PPP, Indian-based party. They've always had allegations of fraud, etc., etc. Never have we seen CARICOM intervene as it did now. Elections have gone on, the PNC make the allegations, and they pull back. But something changed even before this election started and the PNC wanted to do clean the voters list and to go and register people. The PPP, Jagdeo Party, objected, so it was halted. Hence, you will see now what happened after the voting is tied to that process not being completed. Then we had Ms. Motley going in as chairman, and she went with Dr. Keith Mitchell from Grenada, Prime Minister of Gonzales from St. Vincent, Dominica, Prime Minister, and Dr. Keith Rowley from Trinidad. As chairman of CARICOM, she made a statement. But I have found, this is my personal view, I found Ms. Motley's statement to be a bit unseemly in that if you are going in there to meet with both parties, the comments she made from time to time seem to always reflect, for me looking at it, as though it was the PNC, that is Mr. Granger, who was holding up, not that party. They seem to be something. They don't want the votes counted. I remember her coming back after the last visit, and she said, some must count. Any attempt to stall the process or any attempt to obfuscate the process is one that runs against the spirit of the Chief Justice judgment. And so these statements to me, funny, even this last statement she made that, how can the Chief Election Officer make count votes, say votes are not valid, etc. But so let me give these couple of points to let listeners understand what happened. After they came in, a CARICOM team was brought in. They had COVID, they had to stay off a while, they came back in to observe, just to observe the process. The PPP were allowed to send their rep, the PNC and the other parties. Now, what the chief election officer, now remember, this is a public servant, and this is where I find it strange that CARICOM Prime Minister Mr. Gonzalez making statement, the PPP should, you know, when the votes counted, show they're the winners, etc. This is a sovereign country, and these kind of statements have never been heard. When Ms. Motley won all 30 seats, nobody said, you won in every box bar two in St. John. That's something straight. Nobody commented. When Mr. Gonzalez, there were questions raised about his winning, nobody from the other prime ministers jumped in. When you had America in 2004 with Al Gore and George Bush, they counted Chad to make sure that the votes were credible. This is what the Chief Justice said. The Court of Appeal in the latest judgment said the votes counted must be credible votes. And I want to give a direct quote. The court ruled that more votes cast means more valid votes, so that the determination of a final and credible count does not mean a near counting of votes, but a final assessment of the credibility of the vote. Somebody in Demerara Waves, which is a Guyanese online thing, said, an opposition lawyer said, he believes that decision by the Guyana court gives the chief election officer, Mr. Keith Lowenfield, the right to decide what a valid vote, that his powers is set in law and in the Constitution of Guyana. These are the questions that were raised by Mr. Granger's party and his persons who were looking at the vote. And they went to court on it. They said they were voter impersonation. That is, persons who were dead were seen to be counted as voted. Persons who migrated and live overseas were counted as voted. There were missing votes or missing ballots. There was unstamped ballots. There was missing poll books. There were missing oaths of identity, that sworn statement of identity. There were also unsigned oaths of identity or sworn statement of identity. There were more ballots of votes found in boxes than there were electors on the list. A whole list of irregularities. Now, the CARICOM observer said, yes, there were anomalies. Yes, there were irregularities. But the result of the election was reasonably credible. Nobody would want to give an election validity based on reasonably credible and not purely credible. Just as I said in USA, those people from the US who were questioning and saying the opposition should go in, they spent months having legal case, looking with a magnifying glass to see which Chad, if there was hanging Chad, and et cetera, et cetera. And I find it distasteful the way how just two prime ministers, now Ms. Motley's term as CARICOM chairman, I think, is ending in a couple of days, 2 or 3 days. Mr. Ralph Gonzalez is not yet CARICOM chairman, and he was making statement. We have heard no such statement from Dr. Keith Rowley, from Mr. Keith Mitchell, nor from Mr. Skeriton Dominica. I am saying to you, based on some of what we are seeing here and the fact that those votes and the Court of Appeal saying it is not that you have more votes and that means you're the winner. The votes have credible and valid. And I am therefore saying that to me, the only solution, if the swear them in based on that, and that is what the chief election officer is saying, he found a number of invalid votes. And out of the number of 116,000 or whatever, 45,000 were taken away from the Granger party and the other set from the PNC. So it isn't that all the votes were taken away from the opposition. But I feel either they should have a re-election or that this man should be allowed to do his duty, as in all other Caribbean countries, the chief election officer is allowed to do his duty, and CARICOM overstepped its boundary in the public statements.
I want to respond to about the 15 or 20 WhatsApp messages telling me Region 4, not Region 10. After the recount, concerns were raised about the results from Region 4. When the elections, the first set of results came out from the Guyana elections, it was said that they were awaiting results from Region 10, because Region 10, because of the number of voters there, would usually make a determination, and that any lead that the opposition had prior to the declaration of Region 10 would most likely be nullified by the results from Region 10. I remember sitting in the production booth where I usually sit and follow very closely a discussion with Mr. Wickham about the voting patterns in Guyana and how Region 10 voted, and therefore it was premature for the PPP to say they had won until Region 10 had been declared. And that the election supervisor, rather than declaring Region 10, said he was tired, went home, and all sorts of things were said. The comments were being made about Region 10. It is after the recount that there were discrepancies made about Region 4. I tried to stay as close as possible to the discussions on brass tacks so I can counter when people make comments. So I hear the 15 or 20 emails that say it's not Region 10, it's Region 4. But the reason why I said to the lady Region 10 when she was trying, because the original set of comments made on air about the process and the problems in Guyana centered on waiting on the results from Region 10 to discern or discover who had won the elections. The problem continues to be that the longer this process is drawn out, the more will be the concerns raised about the result. Let me put it that way. Brass tacks, good morning. Hello. 4341790. Let me again just make an apology to persons who may be trying to reach us. We seem to be having some issues with the connection of our phone lines. They ring, and when you answer, you hear nothing for a while, and then the line clicks on. 4341790, 2664862. You can send an email message to brasstacks@starcomnetwork.net. The issue with the involvement of CARICOM governments in the affairs of fellow members of CARICOM will always be contentious. I can recall going back to the days of the People's Revolutionary Government in Grenada, comments being made across the space of the waters. I also remember the government of Eric Gehry. I remember governments in the Caribbean being called by other prime ministers as being run by bandits. I remember when the OECS was called the Organization of Eugenia Compton and Son, the prime ministers of St. Lucia, St. Vincent, and Dominica. If CARICOM observers go into Guyana to observe the elections, then I presume they will comment on the results of the election there. It is unfortunate that the Cooperative Republic of Guyana, as well as other Caribbean islands, continue to have issues with their electoral process, and that the comments are usually being made more and more around the lines of race. as happens in Trinidad and Tobago as well. I think the process in the Caribbean is going to become even more convoluted when one looks at the situation in St. Lucia, for example, and I think Antigua, where they're citizen by investment, and you have people from outside of those of the Caribbean region coming in. I think St. Lucia says in their last presentation by their prime minister, some 130 million EC dollars from citizens by investment. If someone invests $130 million in the economy, you can be sure they'll want to have a say in what happens in that economy. So when we talk about the majority of the population and the minority of the population and who holds more wealth, we will then have to factor in citizens by investment and what happens to those people when they decide to exercise their franchise. It is unfortunate that we find ourselves at this particular point with questions being raised and comments being raised about Black Lives Matter and the use of symbols and what they mean to our people going forward, when it is convoluted with all these other things. It tells me that we are still trying to come to grips with who we are, what we are, and what self-governing and self-government means. And I keep getting messages that it's Region 4. I hope you heard my explanation of why I said 10 at the beginning. Perhaps I should have to go back and find that conversation with Mr. Wickham when he was talking about the various regions to clear what is obviously my clogged mind and those who are telling me they're sending messages from Guyana and that they know is Region 4. I'm not going to get into the argument about what region it was. I take back Region 10. The problem is Region 4. Hope that makes you happy. It is difficult to try to manage the comments from time to time. And I've said on more than one occasion that more and more I'm having some issues dealing with the challenges of hosting this program. So it appears that there are those who are perhaps far better equipped than I am to host it. And because of issues here at the building, I'm frankly quite often losing my voice. So let me back away from the microphone for a moment. I will try to find someone to substitute for me on this Thursday edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Have a good day.